The Saffron Robe by Tuesday Love Sang Grandpa, read to you by Blue Friend, January 2017. This is Chapter 7. A deep droning buzz penetrated my sleeping mind. Somewhere nearby, very much thought power was being poured out onto the receptive air. My telepathic powers were stirred. I lifted my nodding head and tiredly opened my drooping eyelids. My, I was tired. A slight stir on my lap, and a loving mouth took a gentle grip of my hand and squeezed with affection. "Prrr, prrr," said the old guardian cat. He looked up at me with deep understanding. The faint flicker of a butter lamp reflected blood red from eyes that were sky blue by daylight. Softly, so softly that I was aware of it only after he had left, the cat slid from my lap and merged with the palpable shadows. Oh, my legs were stiff. The scarce-healed bones felt as if they were grating. The tight, deep burn scar gave the impression that it would at any moment peel away from the flesh to leave again a raw and gaping wound. Waves of pain shot up my limbs and twirled fierce talons of pain along my spine, threatening to tear my ribs from their seatings. I lay still, gasping. As the spasm slowly faded, I cautiously looked about me. Here, in the deep purple shadow of the great sacred figure, I could see, unseen. The windows were outlined as dark rectangles on a wall of dancing shadows. Through the glassless frames, I could see the night sky as a black pall of smoothest velvet sprinkled with bright jewels of light. Diamonds, rubies, and turquoise dots twinkled and swirled above. Here, in the high, thin air of Tibet, stars were seen in color, not like white specks of light as in the lower planes of the world. Here, there were no rolling clouds of smoke to sully the purity of the sky and obscure the grandeur of the heavens. Mars was red, a pale ruby. Venus was green, while the little speck of Mercury was as a splinter of turquoise. Faint finger marks as of finely crushed diamond dust stretched in a band as far as I could see. Tonight there was no moon to compete with and swamp the feeble starlight. On the walls the shadows leaped and postured, now beings of giant figures stretched out to the roof, now squat dwarfs scrabbling on the floor. Off to the side, near me, a butter lamp was damaged. From its battered bottom there came a gluck, gluck, as melted butter seeped out, and then splat, as the congealing liquid spattered on the floor. Again, a distant wall by the side of a window, a tanka fluttered as almost as though there was a moth straining to reach the flickering flames. It clattered slightly as it bulged away from the wall, vibrated, and then sank back as exhausted, only to repeat again and again. For a moment I had what was almost an attack of vertigo. I had awakened suddenly from sleep, and now as I looked about, the shadows moving and writhing and twisting, and the different cadences of the voices at the other side of the sacred figure, it rather bemused me. I looked up at the back of the head of the great figure behind which I was crouched. For a moment I felt panic. The figure was toppling. It was going to fall on me and crush me. The outlines wavered, and I got ready to throw myself sideways, hampered as I was by my damaged legs. But suddenly, I almost laughed out loud, it was the illusion of life through the flickering of the shadows. By now, the pain had somewhat subsided. I got on my hands and knees and softly crept around the edge of the figure so that I could peer into this, one of the innermost of the temples. I had never seen a service in this temple before. We boys were rigidly excluded. For us it was the main temple, or one of the more common of the minor temples. But this, hollowed in the rock far beneath the man-made structure, I wondered what it was, what they were doing here. Cautiously, I pulled my robe around my waist so that I should not trip over it. I edged forward and peered round the corner. This was interesting, I thought. In front of me, in a circle, were 9 lamas, all in their saffron robes, all with their heads facing the center of the circle. And in the center, upon an ornately carved stand, was something. Something which I could not clearly distinguish. There seemed to be something, and yet there seemed to be nothing there. I shivered, and the shaven hair of my head stood rigidly erect, like guards on parade, for the chill fingers of fear had reached out and touched me, stimulating me so that I was ready to flee. I thought that on the carved stand stood a creature from the shadow world, a creature which had no real existence in this, our world, and hardly any existence in the other world from whence it came. I stared and stared. It seemed to be a globe of something, or a globe of nothing. It seemed to be almost without form, and yet what form there was rippled. I wish I could go closer, peer over the head of one of the seated lamas, but that would be sure detection. So I sat back and rubbed my hands into my eyes, trying to wipe away sleep, trying to make them more alert, trying to make them see better in this haze and gloom. Satisfied that I had done as much as I could to my eyes, I crouched forward again on hands and knees and stared, shifting my position slightly to get a better view between the shoulders of 2 lamas. I saw, it occurred to me suddenly, that this was an enormous rock crystal, flawless, perfect. It reposed upon its carved stand and commanded the attention of the lamas, who sat almost in devotion before it. They eyed it intently, and yet not so intently as to engage their physical eyes, but instead it seemed to be a use of the third eye. Well, I thought, I too am clairvoyant. So I stared no more with my eyes, but instead let my clairvoyant faculties come into play. And in the crystal I saw colors, swirls, whorls, and a smoky turbulence. Amazingly, frighteningly, I seemed to be falling from an immense height, falling from the top of the world down into an abyss. But no, it was not an abyss. Instead, A world was stretching out in front of me, a world where there were different colors, different standards. I saw, as from slight eminence, people wandering about, full of misery, full of sadness, some were full of pain. They were lost souls, souls without guidance, souls pondering on a method of release from their worries. As I sat there, entranced, as though I were on the sunlit plain of a different world, the chants of the lamas droned on. Every so often, one would reach out a hand and ring a silver bell. Another opposite would do the same with a different tone of bell. And so they would go on with their chants, their music sliding up and down the scale, not in notes staccato, as in other pans of the world, but here a glissade of notes, sliding one into the other, merging into chords which echoed from the walls and reverberated and made chords of their own. The leader of the Lama group clapped his hands, the one next to him rang a bell, and the third of the group lifted up his voice in a ritualistic chant, "Om, listen, the voices of our souls." And so they went on from one to the other, repeating the age-old stanzas, first one at a time, then in unison, the cadence of their voices rising and falling, lifting me out of time, out of myself. Then came the whole set of prayers of this group, like this. Oh, listen to the voice of our souls, all you who cower in the wilderness unprotected. Listen to the voice of our souls, that we may protect the unprotected. As the first stick of incense is lit and the smoke rises upward, let your soul and your faith rise also, that you may be protected. Oh, listen to the voice of our souls, all you who cringe with fear in the night. Listen to the voice of our souls, for we will be as a lantern glowing in the darkness, that we may guide benighted wayfarers. As the second stick of incense is lit and glows with life, let your soul perceive the light we shine, that you may be guided. Oh, listen to the voice of our souls, all you who are stranded at the gulf of ignorance. Listen to the voice of our souls. Our help shall be as a bridge to cross the chasm, to assist you farther on the path. As the third stick of incense is lit and the smoke trails, let your soul step forth bravely into light. Oh, listen to the voice of our souls, all you who are faint with the weariness of life. Listen to the voice of our souls, for we bring you rest, that rested your soul shall sally forth anew. As the fourth stick of incense is lit and the smoke idly drifts, we bring rest, that refreshed you may rise renewed. Oh, listen to the voice of our souls, all you who scoff at holy words. Listen to the voice of our souls. We bring you peace, that you may dwell upon immortal truths. As the fifth stick of incense is lit to bring fragrance of life, open your mind, that you may know. The sound of the chanting died away. A lama raised his bell and tinkled it softly. Others picked up their bells and tinkled them. First, they all rang separately, and then, according to some prearranged pattern, they all rang out together, forming a special tone scheme which echoed and reverberated and varied in pitch and intensity. The lamas continued their deep droning, repeating again, "Oh, listen to the voice of our souls," ringing their bells, droning on. The effect was hypnotic and mystical. I continued to look at the people about me, or were they about me? Was I in some other world, or was I looking in a crystal? My strong impression was that I was in another world, where the grass was greener, where the sky was bluer, where everything stood out in sharp, vivid contrast. There was the green sward beneath my feet. Good gracious, I could feel it with my bare toes. I could feel moisture seeping through my robe where my knees were in contact. My hands, too, as I gently scuffed them, seemed to feel grass, and perhaps here and there a stone or two. I looked about me with avid interest. There were great boulders in the foreground of a greenish stone, here and there streaked with white veins. Other boulders were of different colors. One to which I was particularly attracted was of a reddish hue, reddish with milk-white strands running through it. But what impressed me most was the manner in which everything stood out with stark reality. The manner in which everything looked more normal than normal, with brighter colors, sharper outlines. There was a gentle breeze blowing. I could feel it above my left cheek. It was rather astonishing because it bore upon it strange scents, exotic odors. Some distance away, I saw something that looked like a bee. It was buzzing along, and it landed and entered the trumpet of a little flower growing in the grass. All this I saw without consciously being aware of the passage of time. But then I became alarmed, wary, for there was a whole group of people coming my way. I looked at them, and I was powerless to move. They were coming towards me, and I was more or less in their path. Here, as I looked at them, I sensed something very much amiss. Some of the people were old people who leaned upon sticks and who hobbled along barefooted, clad in tattered rags. Others were obviously men of wealth, but not with the general air of well-being which affluence usually brings, for one thing stood out particularly about these men and women. They were miserable, frightened. The slightest move made them jump and clasp their hands across their breasts. They looked nervously about them, and not one seemed to be aware of his neighbor. They seemed to feel that they were alone, forgotten, desolate, and abandoned in some alien world. They came on, each one an individual, aware only of his own existence, and yet they came in a group, no one touching the other, no one aware of the presence of the other. They came on, lured by the voices which I too could hear. Oh, listen to the voice of our souls, all you who wander unguided. The chant and the droning went on, and the people came on also, and as they came to a certain spot, I could not actually see what was happening. each face lit up with a sort of unearthly joy. Each person stood more erect as if he or she received an assurance and felt the better therefore. They moved along out of my sight. Suddenly, there was a clash of bells and dissonance, and I felt a violent jerk within me as if someone was reeling me in, as if I was a kite at the end of a string being drawn in against a gale which tried to loft it further. As I looked out upon that strange landscape, I had the impression that night was falling, for the sky was darkening and the colors were becoming less distinguishable. Things seemed to be shrinking. Shrinking? How could they shrink? But undoubtedly they were shrinking, and not only were they becoming smaller, but a fog like the clouds above was beginning to cover the face of that world, and as my horrified gaze took in the scene, getting smaller and smaller in the fog, changed into black thunderclouds shot with lightning. The world was getting smaller and smaller, and I was rising upwards and upwards. As I looked down, I could see it rotating beneath my feet, and then I decided, of course, it was not rotating beneath my feet because I was on my hands and knees in the temple. Or where was I? I was confused and dazed, and then once again came that sharp, terrific jerk, a jerk which nearly spun my brain out of my head. Quite dizzy for the moment, I raised my hands to rub my eyes, and then I gazed again, and I saw before me that the crystal was just a crystal once again, no longer a world, just a crystal, lying dull and lifeless, with no point of light within it. It stood upon its carved base as though it were a stone or an idol or anything, not as the most wonderful instrument of wonderful experiences. Slowly, a lama rose to his feet and took from the base a cloth. It looked like black velvet. Reverently, he unfolded the cloth and draped it over the crystal and then tucked it in. He bowed three times in the direction of the crystal and turned away to resume his seat. As he did so, his astonished gaze fell upon me. For some seconds there was a stunned, shocked silence. Time itself seemed to have been paralyzed. I could just hear my heart give one loud thump, and then no more. There was an impression that the whole of nature, the whole of time, was listening in hushed suspense to see what would happen next. There was a mutter between the lamas. The one nearest me stood up and towered over me. He was the biggest of the lot, but to my terrified eyes he looked bigger than the patella itself. He towered over me and started to speak, but then another lama recognized me. "It's Mingyar's boy, Lobsang," he said, rather relieved. "This is our most telepathic boy. Bring him here." The giant lama reached down and put his hands beneath my arms and lifted me up, for being told that I was Mingyar's boy had given him the knowledge that I could not easily walk, and so he saved me that trouble. He carried me into the circle of the lamas, each one looking at me as if they were going to peer into my soul, as if they were going to peer through my soul, beyond and into other realms leading to the Overself. I was in a considerable state of fright because I did not know that I had done anything particularly wrong. I had chosen this particular temple because some of the others were always thronged by small boys who were not seriously interested in meditation. I was. But what was that? "Lobsang," said a small, wizened lama, "what were you doing here?" "Honorable Master," was my reply, "it has long been my habit to come to the minor temples for private meditation, and I sit behind one of the sacred figures where I cannot disturb anyone else who is meditating. I had no thought of intruding upon your service. In fact," I looked rather shamefaced, "I fell asleep and I was only awakened when I heard your service about to start." Off to the left, the leaking butter lamp had ceased its splat splat, and suddenly there came a short hiss as the floating wick, now deprived of liquid butter, expired and was extinguished against the metal. For seconds it smoldered red, and then there was the acrid, rancid smell of charring wick. From outside our circle came a familiar purr, purr. Friend Cat importantly pushed his way between the two llamas, walked to me with tail erect, and butted me in friendship. I reached out a trembling hand and riffled my fingers through his fur. He turned to me, gave another butt, and said, "Prrr," and sedately stalked off, pushing his way between two more llamas. The llamas looked at each other, and a faint smile played across their lips. "So, our guardian here knows you well, Lobsang. He spoke well for you, too. He assured you of his devotion and told us that you had spoken the truth." For a few moments there was silence. One of the younger llamas turned his head and saw the cat haughtily stalking away. He chuckled and turned back to the group. The old wizened llama, who seemed to be very much of the senior and who was in charge of the service, looked at me, then turned to each of his fellows, remarking, "Yes, I remember. This is the boy who has to have special instruction. We were waiting for the return of his guide before summoning him here, but as he is here, let us test his experience and his capabilities so that we may assess him without the influence of his powerful guide." There was a murmured agreement and low-voiced suggestions which I was far too confused to follow. These were the high telepathic lamas, the high clairvoyants, the ones who helped others, and now I was sitting with them, sitting shivering with fright, it is true, but still sitting with them. One of them turned to me and said, "Lobsang, we have heard so much about you, about your innate powers, about your possibilities, and about your future. In fact, it is we who investigated the record of probabilities to see what would happen in your case. Now, are you willing to undergo some ordeal in order that we may determine the extent of your powers? We want to take you for a walk in the astral and in the world below the astral. We want to take you as a ghost through our patala." I looked at him dubiously. Take? How did they think I could walk? I could hobble about the corridors, but my legs were not yet healed enough to enable me to walk with any degree of confidence. I hesitated, thought about it, and twisted the hem of my robe, and then I replied, "Honorable masters, I am very much in your power, but I have to say that I'm not able to walk much because of my accidents. But as a good monk should, I place myself at your disposal, hoping that my guide, the Lama Mingyar Dondup, would approve of my decision." No one laughed or even smiled at what must have sounded to be a very pompous statement, for I was young and inexperienced, and after all I was doing my best, and who can do more than one's best? Lobsang, we want you to lie prone. We have to have you prone because your legs will not permit you to be in the orthodox position. Therefore, you must lie prone. The old lama carefully took a seat cushion and placed it beneath my head. Then he placed my hands with fingers clasped so that my two hands with fingers entwined were between the end of the breastbone and the umbilicus. Then they rearranged themselves. They shifted the crystal to one side, reverently placing it in a place that I had not previously noticed, in the base of a sacred figure. They sat about me so that my head was in the exact center of the circle. One lama broke away from the group and returned with sticks of incense and a small brazier. I almost disgraced myself by sneezing as a trailing cloud of smoke crossed my face and made my nostrils itch. Strangely, my eyes were getting heavy. I had a sense of increasing lassitude, but the lamas were not looking at me. They were looking at a point far above me. I forced open my eyes, and I could see under their chins. I could see up into their nostrils. Their heads were so far tilted that I could not distinguish their eyes. No, they were not looking at me. They were looking where? The incense smoldered on, making a small sizzling noise which I had not noticed before. Suddenly, I clutched my hands even more tightly, because the whole building seemed to be rocking. I had heard of earthquakes, and I thought that suddenly we of the Potala were being afflicted with an earthquake. Panic welled up within me, and by great effort I managed to suppress it, thinking that it would be a disgrace to my guide if I scrambled to my feet and scuttled out of the temple while lamas sat placidly on. The swaying continued, and for a moment I felt almost sick. For a moment I felt that I was drifting up. I found that one of the beams of the roof was a few inches from my hand. Idly I put my hand out to ward myself off, and to my terror, my hand went right through the beam, not even disturbing the dust which lay upon its surface. With the terror of that experience, I sank down rapidly and landed on my feet by the side of a sacred figure. Quickly, I put my hand out to steady myself, knowing that my legs would not support me, but again, my hands went right through the sacred figure, and my legs felt firm and strong. I had no pain, no discomfort. I turned quickly. The group of lamas was still there. But no, one was absent. He was, I perceived, standing beside me, and his hand was about to touch my elbow. He appeared bright. He appeared rather larger than the others, and when I looked at the sacred figure, I found that I, too, was a bit larger than was my normal state. Again, a great knot of fear seemed to be inside me, and my stomach churned with fright. But the Lama took my elbow, reassuring me with, "It's all right, Lobsang. There is nothing for you to fear. Come with me." He led the way with his hand on my right elbow. Carefully, we skirted the Lama's still sitting in a circle. I looked in the center of the circle, but my body was not there. There was nothing there. Carefully, I felt myself, and I felt solid. Surreptitiously, I reached out and touched the Lama beside me, and he was solid too. He saw my gesture and laughed and laughed. "Lobsang, Lobsang, you are now in a different state completely with your body. Only those with the greatest occult ability, inborn ability, can do such a thing as that. But come with me." We walked on to the side of the temple, and the wall came closer and closer. I withdrew from his grasp and tried to turn aside, exclaiming, "No, we shall hurt ourselves unless we stop. The wall is solid." The Lama regained his grip on me and commanded, "Come along. When you have more experience, you will discover how simple this is." He moved behind me and put his hands between my shoulder blades. The wall loomed ahead, a solid wall of gray stone. He pushed, and truly the most remarkable sensation of my life came upon me as I entered the stone of the wall. It seemed as if my whole body was tingling. It seemed as if millions, billions of bubbles were bouncing against me, not impeding me, just tickling me, just making my hair stand on end, just making me itch pleasantly. I seemed to be moving without any difficulty whatever, and as I looked, I had the impression that I was moving through a dust storm. But the dust was not hurting me. It was not troubling my eyes at all. And I put out my hands and I tried to grasp some of that dust. But it went through me, or I went through it. I do not know which is correct. The Lama behind me chuckled and pushed a little harder, and I broke right through the wall and into the corridor beyond. An old man was coming down the corridor, carrying a butter lamp in each hand, and carrying something pressed between his left elbow and his body. I tried to avoid contact with him, but it was too late. Immediately I was set to apologize for my clumsiness, but the old man went on. He had walked right through me, or I had walked through him, and neither of us was aware of the contact. Neither had the slightest impression that we just walked through another human. With the Lama guiding me, we moved through the building, never intruding upon the privacy of others alone in their rooms, but instead visiting storerooms and, a rather caustic comment or gesture on the part of the Lama who knew me so well, we visited the kitchen. The old cook monk was there, resting against a great leather container of barley. He was scratching at himself and picking at his teeth with a piece of stalk from somewhere. Ever so often, he would turn and spit in the corner and then get back to his scratching and toothpicking. Eventually, as we stood watching him, he turned around, gave a hearty sigh, and said, Aye, time to prepare the food again, I suppose. What a life is this. Sampa, Sampa, and yet more Sampa, and all these hungry people to fill. We moved on and on through the building. My legs did not trouble me at all. In fact, to be truthful about it, I did not even think about my legs, for there was no reason that I should. They didn't disturb me. We were very careful, not to invade the privacy of another person. We turned the corridors as much as we could, so as not to enter any individual living space. We came deep down into the storerooms. Outside, there was my old friend, Honorable Puss-Puss, lying, stretched out full length on his side, twitching slightly. His whiskers were quivering and his ears were flat upon his head. We were approaching soundlessly, we thought, but suddenly he awoke to full alertness and sprang to his feet, bristling with bared fangs. But then his eyes went crossed as he looked at the astral plane, as all cats can, and he started to purr as he recognized me. I tried to pat him, but of course my hand went right through him. A most remarkable experience, for I often patted old Honorable Puss-Puss, and never before had my hand gone inside. He seemed as amused as I was distressed, but he just gave a butt at me, which went through me to his surprise this time, and then he dismissed the whole thing from his mind, laid down, and he went to sleep again. For a long time we wandered through solid walls, rising up through floors, and then at last the Lama said, "Down again, let us go down, for we have journeyed far enough on this occasion." He took my arm, and we sank down through a floor, appearing from the ceiling beneath, and through another floor, until we came to the corridor off which the temple lay. Once again we approached the wall, but this time I had no hesitation. I walked right through it, rather reveling in the strange sensation of all those bubbles coming, all that pleasant tickling. Inside, the lamas were still in their circle, and my lama, the one who was holding my arm, told me that I should lie down in the position I originally occupied. I did so, and on the instant, sleep came upon me. End of chapter 7.